It is well accepted that Jaws is an all-time great film, but its progeny don't rank nearly as high. Two True Freaks is proud to present Is It Jaws, where Paul Spitero and Sean Whalen are joined by an all-star list of guest hosts to review old and new films and place them on the Jaws scale, where they're ranked from Jaws to Jaws 4. Of course, for the purposes of the show, that scale does take some liberties with their actual ratings. Sure, movies that are given the ranking of Jaws are considered classic films with few flaws, if any. A ranking of Jaws 2 indicates that the film is very good and worthy of repeated viewings. A Jaws 3 ranking indicates the film was okay, but that's all. A Jaws 4 means it's ranked as a bad movie. Oh, and if you ever saw Back to the Future Part 2, you know that there's a Jaws 19. That ranking indicates that the movie is so incredibly bad that it's actually fun to watch as a result. So please join Paul and Sean as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
Where'd you get your guinea pig?
Happens to be the best damn candidate out of 600 volunteers.
A secret experiment gave one man the strength of 100.
For the rest of the world, he's just codenamed Captain America.
And the power to save millions.
The Jerrys have an experimental rocket ready to fire at a target somewhere in the United States.
Only he could defeat a superhuman madman.
They got a fella called the Red Skull heading up their outfit.
But saving the world left him trapped in an icy grave until fate released him to finish a battle started decades ago. Ronnie Cox, Kim Gillingham, Scott Paulin as the Red Skull, and Matt Salinger as the Marvel Comics hero, Captain America.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Is It Jaws? I'm Paul Spitero, and I am here with my very good buddy, Mr. Sean Whalen. What's happening, Sean?
It is a pleasure to be here. I'm actually anxious to talk about this one. So it'll be fun to talk about Captain America.
Yeah, I find this to be fascinating because, you know, over the course of the life of the show, from before you were on and after you came on, actually, you were a guest on a few of them before you were a regular, mm-hmm. We've done a lot of the modern superhero movies since the superhero movie became kind of a genre unto itself. I've had the desire to kind of look back at some of the movies before this was really considered to be a genre. Mm-hmm. And we did Superman and the Mole Men, which would fit that. I don't know as far as release scheduling, so this may be before, after, I don't know, but we're going to do the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie. We're going to at least have a somewhat of a discussion on the trial of the Incredible Hulk. And I'd like to do some more of these. And, you know, you and I have had this conversation off the air on a couple of occasions that we wanted to do some of these. And when we talked about recording today, you said, well, what do you want to cover? And I said, okay, you know, let me throw one of these out. And I think I made a mistake, but it's fine. I probably should have said the 1979 Captain America to do the first one.
Yeah.
Or even to do the serial, which I've never seen. Mm-hmm. But instead, I just threw the 1990 film out. So that's the one we're covering. We may get to those other ones. We may not. I don't know. You know, there's so many movies and so little time.
They're good movies for things like this, though, where we're like, hey, let's record something for fun and let's pick something different. And I think this fits the bill.
Yeah, this is definitely something different. And, I watched it for the sake of our recording today. Mm-hmm. And I had the mistaken impression that I had seen this before. And it turns out I'd only seen clips. I never saw this movie from beginning to end until I watched it for us today. And it left me with some mixed feelings as far as its quality. And I think, we'll talk about that at length. Were you familiar with this one beforehand?
I remember seeing, because there's a direct-to-video release, right? So it's
in the
odd.
United States. Apparently overseas, It was a theatrical release.
It's odd, though. I'm a comic book geek. I love this kind of stuff. I don't know how I missed this. I did, though. I mean, I never watched it. And for the amount of time that has passed, for me never at some point to have picked this up and watch it is odd. So this, actually, you brought this up previously as being one that we would put on deck as potentially watching. So I grabbed it for that purpose. I watched it once before, you know, just kind of like to get ready in case we were going to do it. And then I watched it again this morning because of the fact that you said, hey, what about, you know, doing this tomorrow, like one, like in the afternoon? Like, so I'm like, okay, let me watch it again. But I'm shocked I've never seen it. It's because, you know, during that time, there wasn't a ton of superhero movies, certainly not an exploration of the extensive catalog of choices that are out there for comic books. You know, we were getting some movies, but we certainly weren't getting, you know, they were the bigger name characters. It's strange to say that Captain America, I'm not saying it is a bigger name character, but certainly it wasn't one that you were expecting a new Captain America film to come out at that point. I'm shocked that this one went directed to video in the States, but it was an international film release. Captain America. I want to be very clear.
Interesting,
let's think about, let's think about that name.
At the Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
It was released in the UK on December 14th of 1990. That's hence the 1990 release date. But it was released in the United States on July 22nd, 1992.
Wow.
So, you know, a year and a half later it took for it to actually come out in the States. And just to try and put it on a timeline, as of July 22nd, 1992, I was dating my first wife. I believe we were engaged by then. I was probably busy with her, making all sorts of plans. And this probably just blew under my radar for that reason. Plus, I seriously doubt that she would have sat and watched it with me. So that's... You know, I had the thought that I had seen it before, but apparently that was an error. I had not. But I'll tell you, my first thoughts watching this through were that this movie didn't know whether or not it was making a serious run at being a quality theatrical movie, or whether it was a, let's keep, you know, we have the rights to this and let's throw something on film to you know, cash in a quick buck with the, you know, the Golden Globus film releases. And it seems to have a mixture of both over the course of it. And that's what I was saying, you know, I wanted to talk about a little bit more at length. Except for the fact that Matt Salinger, the star of this, apparently son of J.D. Salinger, he was a relative unknown as far as acting goes at this point. But there are some quality acting people in this. We got Ronnie Cox, Ned Beatty, Darren McGavin, Melinda Dillon. Darren McGavin and Melinda Dillon must have come right off the set of A Christmas Story to do this. And Michael Norrie, who at the time I remember thinking of as an up-and-coming actor. He never really came, but I thought he was going to be at one time. So there's definitely... you know, some quality casting in there. And when I look at the cinematography, not the special effects, but the cinematography, it looks like they put some serious effort into that. Mm-hmm. The score seems to have some serious effort to it. And not only the score, but the soundtrack, because there's a couple of songs by fairly well-known, as Southside, two songs by Southside Johnny and one song by, I think, one of the Neville brothers. So, you know, it seems to me like they were kind of dancing in between, let's make this really high quality, let's make a quick buck. And I think it shows to some extent.
It felt like to me like it was a mixture between like a quality 80s action movie and a made-for-TV movie. And there were points in time where like it was almost like it was fighting itself for that purpose, which sounds like I'm, you know, totally trashing on it. I don't mean it that way. It just, I feel like I was trying to figure like a lane for this movie and I was struggling as it was going through. It's an interesting film to watch because of that. Because you're right, there are certain points where it's like really clear that like they were working to tell a really good Captain America story. And that's in there. And it gets a little camp at certain points in time, which was a piece that, like, it almost derailed what was working at certain points. Because there were some camp sequences where I'm like, I don't know that we need to get so campy with this. It's like, we're doing all right.
I think there's as far as this movie goes, and I was trying to keep this in mind as I was watching it, I think you almost need to watch it with a thought about the era it came out in.
Yes.
Because if you watch it and you're thinking about, you know, the movies that have come out in the last 15 years or so, it's probably not being fair to it. Because the quality, you know, again, since superhero movies became a genre, they've developed a much greater desire to put out quality things. Back then, they, you know, superheroes were, you know, they weren't sure. Are we putting this out for kids? Are we putting it out for grown-ups? And I've talked on the show a few times, and, you know, we've talked about, so I think we're in agreement that it takes more work to come up with a script that's going to be quality for the whole family, you know, as opposed to making a kid's movie or making a more grown-up movie. And I think ultimately they leaned, they didn't totally go with, but I thought they leaned more on the kids movie side of things. They tried to simplify things a little bit as far as I was concerned.
I think it felt like they were trying to make an all ages 80s action movie. I mean, that's how it felt to me. I feel like if you watch something from this era from Stallone, something from this era from Van Damme, and then you go and watch this, I think you'll kind of get the lane that they were shooting for. At least that's my impression as far as what I felt like watching it. Even the you mentioned the musical score. I think the musical score kind of plays into that a lot. That's not a knock at all. You know, when you watch it and kind of know what you're going for, it works like as an afternoon popcorn flick. You know, is kind of that kind of realm. It does have it. I will say I was left in both viewings with feeling a certain element of made for TV. And some of that, you mentioned Trials of the Incredible Hulk and stuff like that. I'm like, it's in that category as far as the feel and tone of it. And you're right. I think you got to know the era when you're watching this one. If you go in expecting this to be one of today's superhero movies and you've got that kind of flavor set, you're going to be disappointed. I think if you walk into this expecting a movie from this era and what action looked like in this era, and what direct-to-video I think even looked like in this era, I think you'll walk into this one, give it a chance, and have a good time with it. Because there's a good time to be had with, some of this. I'm giving this weird kind of vibe as far as introducing it because of the fact that I feel this weird, like trying to put this in a lane is very hard for me right now, which affects the review process when you're going through it. But I do think there's a good time to be had with this film. And if you haven't watched it, you really should. Just, I think you said it best. You got to know the era.
Yeah, and I try to put myself into this era. And I'm thinking the maximum way I could have enjoyed this, first of all, again, I need to set my mind back to the 1990s when superhero movies weren't as sophisticated as they are now, and that's probably the wrong word to describe them, but just for the sake of this discussion, I'm going to use sophisticated, or you know, as serious in many ways. I think there's, you know, a more gravitas to some of the ways they're presented, you know, in things like Batman Begins, where they're trying to give it more of a real world feel to it than the superhero comic book world. This has more of that superhero comic book world feel to it.
Agreed.
So I think you have to get your mindset for that. But I want to take it back to my mindset from 1990, but I want to play it on a 75-inch screen in my living room so that I'm getting the big screen effect out of it.
Yes.
And I think if you're able to combine both of those things, I think you get something out of this movie.
I do.
I think it's, you know, I started to watch this on my iPad, and then I moved over to the big screen TV. I didn't think my wife would have any desire to watch this, so I was watching it on the iPad while I was waiting for her, while she was taking care of an appointment. And then when we got home, I switched over to the big screen, and she was making dinner, so she didn't care that I was watching it without her. And I do think the big screen made a difference. I think it was more enjoyable on the big screen.
I agree with you totally, and I think the other piece you got to remember, if you're a viewer watching this, if you're a fan of film history, this is when they were trying to figure out what superhero movies on the big screen could be. They were recognizing that this was something that would lead to big budget pictures. This was something that they felt had some legs to it. They were trying to figure that out. So if you look at the movies that were being released in this era, before we started getting Iron Man and Batman Begins and things like that, if you take a look at the movies in this era, a lot of them were just trying to figure all of this out, like how to get that balanced delivery that works on screen for film. I agree with you, though. You do need to watch this on a big screen of some sort, whether it's a big screen at home. We're not going to see it. I don't think we're going to see it in the theater anytime soon. So I think
I don't think there's going to be any theatrical release. So you're going to have to deal with the biggest, whatever the biggest screen you have in your home is. And if it is an iPad, it's not like that ruins it.
Right.
It's just, I think there's more enjoyment to be had by watching it on a big screen. Interesting. You know, I always say, I feel like I'm always finding contradictions to what I always say. And now I'm going to contradict that. I don't know. But, you know, I like when they show the costumes and things like that in a way where it's true to the comic book. Mm-hmm. I really feel like I have, it's impossible for me not to compare this to the MCU Captain America, where I think they really did a great job of working in kind of the classic costume, but updating it in a more realistic way. Sure. This one has the costume kind of the way it was in the comics for the most part, much more so than even in the MCU ones. And it doesn't totally work, I have to say. The wings on the side of the helm, on the side of the mask, really kind of look silly. Whereas that when they're painted on the side of the helmet mask that Chris Evans is wearing, they look great as far as I'm concerned. So there's a fine line to be drawn there. I don't like when they totally throw the baby out with the bathwater, but you don't necessarily have to do everything exactly the way it is in the comic if it doesn't really work totally in the comic.
I totally agree with everything that you're saying. One thing I'm going to give them credit for, though, so yes, check all those boxes, because I'm in the same place. Some things just didn't work in the costume. I did think they did a really nice job with attention to detail throughout the film on what was happening to the costume. This was supposed to be a done-in-one costume in the story of this film, where this was a special fabric, it was, you know, flame retardant, all that kind of stuff. So you don't have, like, magically now he's going to have this new suit partway through that is not battle damaged. His battle damage stayed throughout the film. I love that. That was an attention to detail that I think sometimes gets lost. And I was like, oh, good on them for, like, kind of keeping this film. He went through years and years. It's got to stink. But he went through years and years of this thing being in ice. The various, you know, like, there was the rip on the one sleeve. And it looked dirty to a certain extent. You know, there was grime on it that showed that, like, he'd been through some battles. There was no new suit to be had. So I liked that part. I thought that was something that sometimes is missed and suspends the disbelief a little bit. It ruins the suspension of disbelief a little bit. They didn't do that in this. I thought that was a good choice. I agree. There's some parts of it that, unfortunately, not all things that are drawn on a comic book page translate well into real life. And I think the costume had some elements of that where it didn't work. But I did like the attempt at getting Captain America's costume right for the big screen. I was like, all right, good on them for giving it a shot and good on them for the parts that worked. And I liked, to me, the sustained battle damage throughout it, I thought was something that was an important touch. Because I would have been like, okay, if she made this one in kind of special suit, like how all of a sudden is it just fine now? And they didn't do that, which was, I thought, I appreciated that piece.
I totally agree with you on that. I was going to get into the acting performances, but before we do that, I wanted to also say, you know, another one of my criticisms of it is this Captain America had basically one mission before he got frozen in ice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he shouldn't be able to have perfected the use of the shield the way he has in here. He's using that thing. He's got every angle figured out. It's bouncing around. Yeah, that was the other kind of criticism I had of it, that the shield is just, he's just a little too good at the shield.
I agree with you on that. The one piece that I was critical in my first viewing on, that I wasn't critical in my second viewing, Red Skull beats him up pretty darn bad in the first fight. But the second watch that I realized, this is a guy who just came out of being shot. And so he went back when they were like questioning if he was going to be up and around even for that mission. So that part worked for me. I agree with you totally on the shield piece, but I liked how there was a reason why he was not ready for prime time physically in that first go around with Red Skull, and why he might be a different flavor in the second fight. He had a lot of rest time, literally on ice. True. So, and honestly, there was some great time between when he actually was unfrozen and when the actual battle occurs. So I thought that part worked really well. Whereas my first go through, I was actually like, well, how is he all of a sudden a good fighter? Well, okay, he was shot. So that part worked. I actually liked that. But the shield thing, I don't know how you all of a sudden know how to throw the shield with all the angles and stuff. I liked it. I liked some of the shield work in it. Some of it didn't work for me.
Well, one of the things... Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
One of the things I liked was something I think the MCU stole from it, mm-hmm. is when he throws the shield and the Red Skull stops it and catches it in his hand.
Yes.
They did that in Winter Soldier with Bucky. And so I don't know if that was inspired by this, because it's very similar in the way it happens. Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, that brought a smile to my face. I don't know if I would have smiled as much if I hadn't already seen Winter Soldier there. But having seen that, it feels like it was an Easter egg that I never knew about.
Yeah. Yeah, especially not having seen it and looking at it from the standpoint that it predates it. There were some things from this that easily could have been borrowed. Or, you know, they could have looked at, hey, we can really do this in a different way as they were going forward.
You know, if they were smart, which I think certainly the Marvel films, up until Endgame, I don't think anybody would argue that they weren't smart. They clearly, you know, I know a lot of people post-Endgame aren't happy with things they've chosen to do. But let's stick with beforehand.
Sure.
If they were smart, which I think they were, you would look at all the prior attempts to put this character on film and see what worked and what didn't work. Because, I mean, you can only benefit from that information. So I would suspect that they saw it. Matt Salinger, probably just a little too stiff as far as I'm concerned, but gave an earnest performance. So I thought he was okay. Mm-hmm. Certainly wasn't going to make us forget Chris Evans in the role. But I thought he was all right. You know, for the script he had and for what he was doing, I thought he came across okay.
Yeah, I agree with you on him feeling stiff. You know, the problem is sometimes depending on who writes Captain America, he feels stiff. So some of that kind of worked for me. He's an interesting sort of character to play. There's been some amazing storylines that I think have really done a very good job of developing Steve Rogers and giving him the personality that he has in the best comic stories and what draws you to Captain America. And I think some writers get it really well, some do not. I think in this story, he looks the part at times. Some of the times where he doesn't, I think, is kind of a challenge of the costume more than anything else. I mentioned that there's certain elements of this that felt a little cheesy, and I think those aren't necessarily always, they aren't his fault. I think it's kind of what they were attempting to do at that time in feeling this out.
Right.
It's the hard part with him is, and it's a really critical piece, there's this great love story that's going on here. And trying to feel that and feel like passionate about it is something that I enjoyed the love story. I thought the love story was good. I did not think it was great. And I just think that there wasn't enough time to really develop the level of chemistry that I think you want to see to really believe in it. And the part that like some of the love, I don't know if it's love story, I don't know if you want to go as far as love story, but some of it transferring from mother to daughter in this time frame did not work for me. That was a part.
That's always been a troublesome thing as far as the relationship with Peggy Carter and Sharon Carter. I've always had some issues with that as far as how it was presented in the comics.
Certainly in the context of the time frame of this movie where the mother's murdered and he seems to, I don't want to say he got over it pretty quickly, but kind of did. fact that, you know, they're it was, I don't know that they had Sharon and Steve had this great love story in this at the end. I don't feel that way, and I was glad that they kind of stayed subdued with it, because I think if they'd went too far with it, I would have a much bigger issue with it than I do now. But it was, it felt like all of that kind of moved a little too fast for me.
But I feel like they kind of told us that they have a great love, but they didn't really show us a great love.
Yes, yeah, and I would have loved to have seen more of that, because I think it would have added just a little bit more. When she died, it would have had a lot more substance to me. It was good, but I think it had the potential to be great. And that's going to be a lot of, if there's areas where I have issues, it's that piece where it's, I see potential in a number of areas of this where they were skirting the edge of, this could have been great.
I'm gonna put the little asterisk on that and say it could have been great for today.
Agreed.
I don't think this was ever going to hit the point where it was going to be an all-time classic, no matter how much attention to detail they gave it. Mm-hmm. But I think it was an enjoyable romp, so to speak. And I think a little bit more, you know, if they hired one of us to be a consultant on it, I think it could have gotten into a higher level.
I think that would have been a danger. I mean, here's the thing. I think having me on the cast, on the crew, would have been a danger, too.
Possibly.
Yeah, we listened to that guy, and they did us do what?
What did you think of, first of all, making the Red Skull an Italian citizen? I'm going to get to you, you doom come. Turns it, it's Father Guido Sarducci as the Red Skull.
Yes, yeah, that part really stuck out for me. It was, because I was enjoying so many elements of, like, the horror aspect of his story. Because his is really a horror story in this one. So you get why he's evil. Like, I mean, if you're looking for the antithesis of the great good that we're painting Steve Rogers to be, this is an example of a movie that I will say this benefited from the storytelling of what made Red Skull. Because I didn't feel we were totally there with Steve Rogers. But in the end, so what do you got to do in that end? You've got to have the villain that just feels evil. It worked so well until he lived through time and something happened with this new version of him that we got that was in present day. That part, I was like, oh, don't have him talk.
Well, I thought he had a little bit of, again, you know, foreshadowing what was to come. The way his story was presented was familiar to the way Magneto was shown in the X-Men franchise. Mm-hmm. You know, taken as a child during World War II, or actually this would have been before World War II, the way it was presented, but still taken by as a child, and you know, his mother killed in front of him, and, you know, made him a tragic villain.
Yeah.
But we didn't see any of that three-dimensional tragic villain persona in the modern day Skull, unfortunately. We just saw the crime boss Red Skull.
One of the things that they did with him that I think ruined some of that was these one-liners they gave him. He, like, every so often had a comedy one-liner. And I don't know that those really were needed, because his story was menacing. And like, even in their first confrontation together, you know, he's throwing some one-liners out there. And I'm like, don't take him that way, because you've got an interesting, scary, creepy story going on here with the Red Skull that I think was working. I think they didn't. That's where I think 80s action movie is what kept coming into my head, because there were points in time where one-liners were dropped in here that so totally fits the philosophy of an 80s action film. And actually, it validates some of what you're saying, as far as you got to think about the era. This may have been a great movie in its era, you know, as far as in that category. I think this was totally aiming to be action film. And I think because of that, it kind of took away from some of the pieces that I thought were working, in a way that there was one-liners that were awkwardly placed in that, like, took away from the gravitas of, you know, the sequence, where they were doing some cool things that I thought were really interesting, and I don't know, this is not a time for a chuckle.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on all of that. The supporting cast, again, I thought was top-notch.
Yes.
In particular, Ronnie Cox as the president, the young boy who is impressed by Captain America and grows up to be president.
Mm-hmm.
And always remembers and, you know, stays close friends with his best friend from then, who's now played by Ned Beatty, who's not quite as doofusy as he is as Otis, but still not the brightest bulb in the you know, I found it very funny, and it was one scene I definitely know I've seen before, the way he dupes him and he's, oh, I'm getting car sick, and he runs in and just steals his car, and then he does it again to Sharon.
Yes.
I found that amusing. I probably shouldn't have found it as amusing as I did, but I did anyway.
I'm going to contradict myself. I liked both of those sequences, and I liked when Sharon did it to him. And it contradicts what I'm saying as far as, you know, the one-liners, and sometimes some of the comedy bits did work in this. They were like in the right spots, and I felt like those worked because you understood the motivations behind what Steve was doing. Steve didn't trust Nate Beatty. Let me get the car. Let me get where I need to go right now to try and figure out what is going on. I actually liked that he just didn't instantly wake up in this era, and he's okay with everything. Like, he believes that he's been frozen for that many years. I liked that he was suspect. That was an interesting choice. You mentioned Ned Beatty and Ronnie Cox's characters. I want to give a testimonial to the two kids. They did good casting there, because you've got to establish for us this idea, when you don't have a lot of screen time for this film, that these two kids were friends growing up. These kids looked like they could grow up to be Ned Beatty and Ronnie Cox, which was a real good choice, because without having that history and strong, you know, friendship, I like the Dakota Ring kind of thing that they were doing with them. And, you know, you have that. And I thought that was a clever part of the story and kind of harkens back to the old movie serials, which Captain America has a history in. So I thought that part was kind of cool what they were doing there. Those two are great actors. And sometimes you can have like really good actors in a film, and they can help elevate certain sequences because of the fact that just their presence is there. I liked Ronnie Cox as the president. I liked his little story about how the fact that he worked his way up throughout, you know, history. We got to see his way working his way up to be a president. The only piece that I kind of grunted and groaned with his relationship with Steve was, Steve saw this kid when he was on a speeding rocket.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
what, you know, I let that kid go right over my head.
Yeah. I did. I will admit, I did both times watching it. I'm like, really? He saw that? I let that go too. But I can't. I'm not going to pretend that wasn't something where I'm like, are you kidding me? As he's, I actually like the fact that even though it shouldn't work, that he's kicking at the fin of the rocket with his heel, and the way that all worked. And I do like the motivation of the kids saw this pivotal moment, and throughout his life he held on the fact that he was inspired by Captain America. That part, I did like that part, even though the establishment of that was something where I'm like, oh, that's a little bit hokey. But I did like that he got to meet his childhood hero. And you almost saw Ronnie Cox become like a child again in those interactions with Steve. And that part, well, I
think Ronnie
out.
Cox is an excellent actor. I really do. I think he never became the major supporting player that I thought he could be.
Yes.
I mean, he's in a lot of great stuff, but I think he is even better than what we've seen. I think he could give like some seriously quality performances. I loved him when he was on Star Trek The Next Generation as, yes, Captain Jellico. I thought he gave like a tremendous portrayal. So, I mean, and there's so many other things. You know, we get him from RoboCop or you know, Beverly Hills Cop, and just so many performances that he's just outstanding in a supporting role. And I think this is one of them. I,
yep,
think he really brought to this character what I think is right. I was talking recently about like when I met Neil Adams, and I was sitting there and I was like a fanboy, and it took me a little while to calm down and like just have a conversation with him, 'cause I was so starstruck by him. And I feel like Ronnie Cox is playing the president of the United States. He's not going to be like me. But I thought he portrayed that same thing, like when he met Captain America, like you could see in his eyes his admiration and how, you know, how he was just, you know, like a little starstruck by him. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was great.
We needed that. It worked in two areas, actually. His interactions with Red Skull worked for me, too. Because in both cases, I think Red Skull and Captain America, I needed the feel of, I need to feel Captain America is my hero in this one, and I need to hate Red Skull. And I think he served as more of my gateway into those feelings than a lot of things that were going on. He was a great part of this film, I thought.
What did you think of Sharon?
What she did, I thought, as an actress was pretty... I mean, she played both characters, didn't she? Didn't she play the mom and her?
Yes, she played the mother and the daughter.
Yeah, so I thought she was good. I think any of my criticisms really isn't of her as an actress, more as I don't think the story made me feel Steve and her mom together, and I didn't really make me feel the two of them together. It was... I enjoyed seeing them. I just didn't feel... I don't know if chemistry is the right word or something. There was something missing for me. Nothing bad. I thought they were good together. So it's not like I was sitting here saying, man, they were awful. It was bad casting or anything like that. I'm not really in that place. I just felt like something was not quite grabbing me with them. It is tough to play the role of both the mom and the daughter. And I will say that I even questioned whether or not she played both. So that is a testament to her. Because of the fact that I think that, and it's testament to makeup and how they made all of that work. You know, was it really an actress that they found? You know, first I thought, is this an actress they found that like looks similar to her? And then I realized later, oh wait, this is the same person. I did eventually catch on. But I figured I would ask the question again just because it was that good for me. I don't think she did. I think she did a good job. I don't have a lot.
I thought she did okay. Mm-hmm. with what she was given. Mm-hmm. I thought she was a little bit too much. I thought the way she was presented as Sharon was just kind of a little bit too much in the era that this movie came out. Like, you know, it didn't feel timeless. But I did not feel in either portrayal. I didn't feel the chemistry between her and Captain America. Which I think is what you're saying as well.
I agree.
I felt a little bit of it with when she's playing the mother as older.
Yes.
When he comes to the house and she's talking, not so much from him, but from her. I felt when she was talking and she was saying, of course I kept the house, you know, in case you came back and whatever. I felt a little bit of emotion there that gave me a feeling of a slight bit of chemistry. But that's as far as that went.
She had one great scene during that I thought was great. It was the one where she was reflecting on her age and they were both in the room mm-hmm. together. And she's talking about how she felt that she was ugly now and that she was so much older. Clearly what I felt there was she still really loves him. And this is something that's like out of a dream for her. And it's in front of her right now. And it's like, this was her life's path, the path that she really wanted, that is now right in front of her. And he even says, when he hugged her, I actually really liked his line, where he was talking about how maybe it wasn't meant for us or that type of thing. It was trying to console her in some way. I thought they had a really good, very real moment there that took advantage of the fact that you're presenting these circumstances, and I thought they took advantage of the unique circumstances and delivered, I thought, a really good scene there. And I thought both actors portrayed it really well, but her in particular. I thought I was really moved by the way she made me feel like she is this woman who it has struck her how much older she is of him now. And in her mind, I'm no longer the girl that he came back for. That time has passed. And I think that's something very real that somebody would be feeling in that circumstance. And it just was, I thought, well played by her. Well played.
I thought well played, and I thought well written too, because yes. She starts reflecting back on her life saying, you know, her husband, you know, he's a good dad. And, you know, clearly she's saying she's had a good life, but it wasn't the life she chose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for better or for worse, she settled for her husband because Steve wasn't there. So she, you know, she had to move on with her life. And this was as good a life as she could make for herself without him. And that all kind of came through in her performance. So I got to give her some kudos for that and in the script, the way it was written. So, you know, as somebody who's getting older, and, you know, you always look back on your life and the choices you made and say, well, what if I had done this differently? What if I had done that differently? She didn't have a choice. She didn't reject Steve and then have to look back and say, oh, wow, I wish I had gone with him when I could. She had no choice. He was gone. But she's looking back and saying, effectively, I made as good of a life without you as I could, but it wasn't as good as if you had been around. And I thought that's a little deep for this movie.
So that's on that spectrum, and I think that's an example of great. Going on the other spectrum for me, there is an area with her where I had a problem, and I don't know if it's her or the writing, to be fairness, or a combination of the two. She's confronted with the women that murdered her mother. She saw her mother's dead body. She was on scene, seeing all of this. And in confronting them, the reaction was like she broke her nail. If even that, I think she'd be more upset if she broke her nail. I wish I had seen more. I know there was frantic circumstances happening during then, but it was like there was no emotional reaction to that at all.
A combination of the script, the directing, and the acting failed to bring across how breakneck this is supposed to be at that point.
Yes.
Because I think if it had come across as more breakneck, then you say, okay, she doesn't have time to get emotional about this, and then you can kind of move forward with it.
Yes.
But they were almost talking casually. And so I agree with you. I thought that was poorly played.
Because there was time. That's the problem with it. If it had been more frantic, you sit there and go, she had no time to even reflect on that. She did. And she was sitting in there quite a while. She had time to get a little angry. You know, especially when the president waved down and said, hi, Sharon. She might have said, hey, listen, I can't talk to you right now, Mr. President. I'm a little bit angry about the two women that just threw me in here.
I thought the direction in the movie was passable. I didn't think it was outstanding. I didn't think it was terrible. And again, I almost felt like it was a victim of what I was talking about earlier. It didn't know whether, you know, they were making a film that was going to be a theatrical release or a direct-to-video cash grab. The director's name is Albert Pyun, P-Y-U-N. I'm not familiar with him. Apparently, he passed away back in 2022. And I'm just looking at his Wikipedia page. It says, was an American film director who made low-budget B-movies and direct-to-video action films. Let's see if I could see in his filmography anything of note. Sword and the Sorcerer sounds familiar.
That was
Cyborg. I think that might be a Van Damme movie.
It is. I saw both of those.
He also did Blood Match, Kickboxer 2, Kickboxer 4.
Actually,
not a lot of, you know.
Looking at his resume, it fits what was being, it fits everything that was being aimed, like what this film feels like. It fits. I don't mean that as an, I mean, he did these kind of movies.
So, you know, I guess it was okay. The direction was okay for what it was. Mm-hmm. I don't think it elevated or dropped the quality of this movie. I think it's just, you know, it was, it sounds like a real pejorative word, but it was workmanlike. I think at some points the direction almost felt a victim of a relatively low special effects budget combined with a relatively low ability to show the high level of special effects that we would have now.
I wish I had seen this in 92. And the reason why I'm saying that is, at least what I've been bringing to the table right now is, I know what I would have felt like seeing this in 1992. And there would be a nostalgia factor I'd be bringing to this that I don't have right now because I didn't see it then. because with what he was trying to do with this as a director, this would have succeeded for me in 92 as being something where I'd have been like, dude, we got a Captain America movie. And I would have felt like that in 92, seeing this, because of the fact that we didn't have the luxury of everything that we've seen since. With it. And so I'm trying to put myself in that place. It's really hard to watch a film now the way that you would have watched it in 92. But I think it's very worth seeing for, like, what they would have done with this back then. What they did do with this back then.
The music in the movie is by a gentleman named Barry Goldberg. And it looks like he was more of a rock guy, worked with Stephen Stills, Muddy Waters. I don't think he was so much of a film score person. But that said, I thought the score, I thought it had some hints of what was going to come from Silvestri in First Avenger. There were points where there was that patriotic swell of, you know, horns and things going on that I thought it almost sounded like Silvestri took that and was inspired to do what he did, that there's a touch of it in there. So I'm going to say that the score of this movie rose above the material.
It felt very much like when we look at like Kickboxer 2 and Kickboxer 4, like those type of movies, The Sorcerer, and things like that, that this had been done like this before. The music fit. Like, I felt some of, even the closing song, when you're hearing it, when you're seeing the, it's shift over to the artwork of Captain America, and you've got that narrative going across it. We start hearing the closing theme, and it felt very much like, again, 80s, like a wrap up to an 80s action film. And I really liked the feel of all that with the music end of it. You're right. I think the music was a help to this film versus something that was a hindrance or had no value. I think it really did kind of keep you moving through this in some places where it needed help.
Now, it's worth mentioning that when they were casting this film, apparently, according to the Wikipedia page, Dolph Lundgren and Arnold Schwarzenegger were both considered for the main role.
And no,
I think either one of those would have been terrible as Captain America. Mm-hmm. You know, for Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I hate, you know, we did our Batman and Robin review, and I had to blast Schwarzenegger's performance in that, and now I got to do it again. And I love Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But, I do too.
But if he had been cast in this, it would have felt like, I forget what the name of the character is on The Simpsons that's supposed to be Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was Radioactive Man.
Oh,
that's
yes, what it would have
felt like.
Yeah.
When they were doing Radioactive Man, the movie.
Yes.
So that's what it would have felt like to me. So, no. But apparently, Val Kilmer was offered the role. And I think had he accepted it, that would have brought this film up a level.
Oh, we're having a different, at least on some level, a different conversation.
Oh yeah, I think his performance would have delved much more into the emotion of the character, and you know, I think it would have been closer to what we got from Chris Evans.
If you're giving me though Matt Salinger, you're giving me Dolph Lundgren, and you're giving me Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm choosing Salinger any day of the week.
Agreed. I think the only reason to go Schwarzenegger or Lundgren was hoping that the name recognition would get you box office.
And it would have been one of those films where Schwarzenegger, when films are written for Schwarzenegger, they're great. When they're not written for Schwarzenegger, they're not. So
yeah,
true. This would not have worked.
But I think Kilmer in the part, I think it absolutely would have worked. Mm-hmm. It's one of the few times, usually when we review movies on here and we talk about what could have been as far as the casting, usually our thought process is, no, the guy they got was the right guy.
Yeah.
In this instance, this is one of the few instances where I'm saying, I would love to see the movie with that guy in it. You know, so I do think the Val Kilmer part is an interesting thought. The movie was generally panned as far as the reviews go. It says here, Rotten Tomatoes gave it 6% based on 17 reviews. So it's not really a very large sample size. I think it's better than a 6%
I do
movie. But, you know, the people who were inspired to go in and rate it, you know, obviously, you know, was not people who were loving this movie. And I could say, you know, I don't rate anything on Rotten Tomatoes, but if I did, I don't know that this is one I would be running to my computer to rate it anyway. So
no.
I think people who dislike it would be more likely to chime in. I'm going to go right into it. I'm going to say this is a decent Jaws 3 movie. Mm-hmm. It's not by any means classic or, you know, excellent or great or any of those superlatives, but it was enjoyable. And, you know, I sat through it. I didn't feel like, oh, I wasted the 97 minutes it took to watch it. I felt like I enjoyed the 97 minutes I spent watching it. And that's good enough to make it a Jaws 3. So that's where I'm landing on this one.
I'm the same way. I wanted to watch it twice. And that's the area where, like, you said, like, hey, can we do Captain America? I already watched it once for the purpose of doing this. And honestly, it would have been interesting commentary if I said, Paul, I didn't want to watch this again. Like, there's no way you could make me watch this again. Because I would have brought that to the table, and I think it would have been an interesting part of the conversation if I felt that way. I think for me, it's a Jaws 3 with an asterisk on it that I think everything you said earlier, I think, sets the stage for this. If you're listening to this and you have not seen it, I would definitely take Paul's advice as far as recognizing the era that this film was put together in. Watch it for the intention of seeing, foundationally, how did superhero movies get their start? How did we get to the point where we're at right now as far as our expectation of what is a good superhero movie and what is a bad superhero movie are a very different level. This was an era where we were just glad to get them. So these kind of direct-to-video releases and things like that. In 92, I would have loved this. I'm not saying it would have been like, you know, Jaws 1, even with nostalgia factor, but I do think in 92 for me, this would have been a Jaws 2 because of the fact that, wow, what a great attempt at a Captain America movie. And it would have been an era where I was seeing action movies like this and loving them. As you're rattling off the director's catalog, I'm like, those are all movies I liked, you know, back in the day, and they kind of fit in that category. What would have given it a Jaws 2 extra credit in 92 for me would have been that it was Captain America in 92 and yeah, seeing that.
Agreed. That's, you know, in 1992, I would have been much more enamored with the fact that we got a superhero movie. Yeah. Now we've gotten so many superhero movies that I can tend to be a little bit more discriminating on
them.
Oh,
yes.
But again, that doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy this. I did. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, as far as Captain America goes, I don't know when we're going to do more Captain America, but I think we're going to work our way backwards. Like, you know, there was the 1979 movie, and then there was, in 1979, a sequel to that movie, mm-hmm, with Reb Brown as Captain America. And I think probably what we'll try and do is maybe do both of them as one show.
Yeah, we have to, because I want to do the one. There's one with a motorcycle, and I want to talk about that one. I don't remember which one it was.
Yeah, okay, that's why I don't remember actually watching those at all. So that'll be interesting to see. We're kind of doing a reverse timeline on it. We're going backwards. Mm-hmm. And then I would like to seek out the serial and maybe do that as well.
Sounds good.
So I hope everybody is enjoying listening to this. I've been trying to say at the end of these episodes that we have the Is It Yours Facebook page, and if you have opinions on our shows, on the movies we cover, on, you know, anything of merit, if you're watching movies that you think, hey, this is an interesting one, because unlike what some of the people on the Is It Yours Facebook page think, it's not just about yours. It's about movies. So if you're watching a movie and you say, hey, this is one, you know, you might want to consider, and I just watched this, or I'm watching this now and I think it's great, or whatever your thoughts are, share with us. We'd like to know. We are available on twotruefreaks.com. We've made the effort to get ourselves onto your other pod catchers, you know, Apple Podcasts and Spotify and others. If you have a pod catcher that you use that does not carry this, let us know and we'll see if we can't get it on there. And if you can, whatever pod catcher you use, if you can give us a high rating, I'd really appreciate it, because that's how people will find us. And, you know, as much as we enjoy getting on and just talking about movies, we enjoy it even more knowing that people are listening to us talk about movies. So, you know, if you can do that for us, we'd really appreciate it. If you think there's something we're missing or something we're doing wrong, let us know that. I do take constructive criticism. I really don't need the message that just says, oh, you guys suck. But if you say, you guys could have done this better or you could have done that better, we will try to do so. So All that said, thanks, Sean, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Just when I am needing help of my English lessons. It seems the Americans have made a poor choice for their champion. Pity him! He is like a child! Dr. Vasselli has died a failure. Where is the pen of my aunt? The pen of my aunt is on the table. Am I saying right, American? I want good English to speak when I am getting to New York!
Truppen vom Abschussplatz weg!
You are a perfect symbol of America, my brother. Weak and self-pitious. You have even failed to teach me English. But I am much practicing while you sleep. Where is the big bomb going? The big bomb is going to the... How you say Casabianca? No, no, don't tell me. I know. It's White House. A present for President Roosevelt. Tell me. Do you think I could be president of the United States someday?
15, 14, 13, 12.
Wait.
10.
Listen to me.
No time, flyboy.
You can travel cheaply as one, you sick bastard. Now stop the launch.
Stop it or I'm taking you with me.
Halt!
Disgraziato! Here!
Unmöglich! Es ist zu spät! Zu spät!
Eins!
This is no time!
Oh. Falling hands!
Amazing!
No!
Die Rakete hilft mir!
D.C.
Well, that's just where we're going to be in the morning when you wake up. Now, you get to bed.
But I want to see the president.
And don't wake your father. He's got that early meeting at the State Department.
When I grow up, I'm going to be president.